Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 161 is coming at you. Howdy everybody, Portal Gaming Podcast, a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.theportalct.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. That's where you'll find me, your host, The Brant, for this episode. Portal Gaming Podcast, also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. And for more awesome podcasts, you can go to www.dicetowernetwork.com. And don't forget to check us out on YouTube with our channel, Step Into the Portal, where you can watch live playthroughs of games, unboxings, and some five live reviews coming up as well. Howdy, everybody. Welcome to the episode where I have the longest intro in the history of podcasts.
Oh, my God. What have you done?
Love it. Every time gets me jazzed. This is my co-host for this episode, Jason Perez. Jason, hey. From the Shelf Stories channel. Dice Tower contributor and former host of Every Night is Game Night.
Every Night is Game Night.
You have some totally different theme or whatever, but I always just sing it as the Everything is Awesome.
Yo, my peoples, what's up? Coming at you from West Hartford, Connecticut, which is right down Route 84, not too far. Ran into Brant a couple of times at the Portal, lent him a game which you're going to be reviewing today. But, you know, just for now, thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Today is a review of Palooza. That's all we're going to call this episode because Jason's always been impressed that I'm able to, you know, review 4, 6, 8 games per episode. So I said, Jason, you're doing it with me many as we can. So actually, you're the first guest on my new or co-host even on the new format here for the Portal Game Podcast, where I'm going to kind of once a month just do a review of Palooza and invite a different guest each time to host with me. Is the plan here, because my favorite thing to do is review games, and it's just, I don't like doing it by myself. So my new thing is to try to get somebody from the community to come on who wants to review a bunch of games and review games with me. So
that's going
to
be a little bit difficult because like nobody can keep up with you. Like it's going to be you talking about 11 games and I was like, I got 3.
It's true. I love to play through. I've actually slowed down a lot in 2020. I know everybody did, but I honestly started playing games like 5 to 10 times each instead of, you know, I you know, there were some games that were once when you reviewed them, but I was pretty straightforward about it. Like this is a first impression because it wasn't my game, but I played it. You know what I mean? In terms of all that. But yeah, I play a lot of games, but this year it was a lot of repeat and a lot of playing with Larry.
Once you get that bubble, bubble go. I was unsuccessful creating a bubble. I do have a friend in New York that I visited. We played through all of Quirky Circuits. That would be the big game.
Okay.
That was our big campaign game was Quirky Circuits, and I love it. I love that game. But we're not talking about that one today. But it's an amazing game.
Yeah. So. Like I said, we're going to review a whole bunch of games, but I know there's been a lot of upheaval in board games and a lot of drama and other things going on. And I know sometimes by not commenting on it, you're kind of not doing anything. And I just wanted to say that, like, Portal Game Podcast, Brant specifically, like, I am a Black Lives Matters person. I am for inclusivity, you know, an ally of the LGBTQ plus community, all of those things. I really want the podcast to be about reviewing games and talking about games, probably because my day job is working in an inner city school.
Right.
I am learning anti-racism. I am learning Kingian nonviolence from the great Dr. King and being trained in all those things. And I am, you know, working with a diverse group of students, minority, white, et cetera, in an art school teaching mathematics on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes when I do the podcast and gaming, it's like, okay, I'm not stepping away from it, but I'm just stepping adjacent to it. So, but you know, it is important. And so I think as a white straight dude who's married and a Christian
who looks like Santa Claus.
I can say, right? Looks like Santa Claus. There's not a lot for me to say, so I really want to be a listener, and so I'm going to try to highlight every episode something that's happening. And Jason, I didn't have you on for this reason, but you just did a great video that everybody should check out on Shelf Stories.
Thank you.
Defining the two types. Sorry, what you gave as two types of racism. I'm not saying they are the two types, but right. You define two different types. And I definitely recommend everybody check out that video because Jason did a great job.
Check out that video and also check out the video that really wasn't me. I invited six Black content creators onto a show on a panel, and we all told our stories. And that was it. Like, I mean, I think like, that one was the more well-received episode. Like, the two types of racism, you get your backlash and you get people who have a problem. Surprisingly, the international folks had a lot of problems with the way I presented the things. It's like, that's great. That's a good conversation starter. So I'll follow up with that. So, but the Black content creators panel, which is I released pretty much the same time. I was going to stagger them, but like there was so much happening on right. Twitter and just the community. Like every once in a while, when we get into our meltdowns, it's just like a spiral. There's no brakes on social media. Like nobody pumps the brakes. So it's like, you know what? If there's no brake pumping, let me at least put something good into the space. And it's been so well received that I've had people like say they cried and they was meaningful. And it wasn't me. Like the biggest thing that I did was scheduling and create a safe space. And then once I created a safe space, it was for Tessa Elise, it was Monique and Jeremy and Mick and Starla. And Eric, sorry, Eric. I'm like, yeah. Okay, there he was. The hair. I remember the hair.
That's from What's Eric Playing, right?
From What's Eric Playing, Eric Yurko. And just told our stories and talked about our struggles, but also talked about our aspirations in terms of what we are really looking for, not what people tell us what we're looking for. What we're really looking for is a truly multicultural space. So I have a lot of stuff going on. It's Black History Month. I have more coming. I'm not sure when this is releasing, but I do have, you know, there's, please visit my channel. I try to get deep. My fluffy stuff is for the Dice Tower.
Yeah.
And for the one-stop co-op shops, that's my fluffy stuff. So Self-Stories is my let's improve this community channel.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, so that's going to kind of be a plan is I'm just going to try to highlight something where I'm going to let other people talk. I think that's my best spot. So, again, not ignoring it, but not speaking about something that I don't know about.
Sure.
is that plan until it makes sense for me to say anything, you know, in terms of that. So with all that aside, let's review some games. What do you say?
Do it. Oh, yeah. But I'm tired. What have I done?
You know, I didn't tell you I was going to do all that, but I wanted to be on the spot. But then I want to be able to move on and keep going.
Yeah, we are going to move on. Let's talk about maybe 12 games, 15 games. Who the heck knows? Let's see where we go.
Go, you're up first.
Oh, really? Wow. I was not giving a heads up on that. Okay, so my first review was let's not belabor the point too much. So you talked about a review after first play. This is the one game that I only got one play of, so I want to put it out there that is an impression. So I'm going to lead this one off first. This one is called One Small Step. This is from Academy Games. Historical games maker. They've made Conflict of Heroes. I have Freedom of the Underground Railroad, which if you see my content, maybe I'll mention it later because I reviewed it recently for the Dice Tower. But One Small Step is their most recent game. It's a worker placement game that depicts the space race. So it is for either two or four players. It's really a two-player game. Share the roles, right? It's a little bit okay. So worker placement's hard to describe, right? Because like when I place the workers on the spaces, you get resources and change. This one, there's a lot of theme. The cards, that it's so much history. You could tell the designer just put so much of the history, the different phases of the rockets and, you know, Sputnik launching and, you know, how'd the race go? Really, it's really about the race to space. The worker placement kind of like, you know, mechanisms, the message type thing, how they got to the race part is in worker placement, who gets to the spot first, right? So then cards will come out and the cards represent, different modes, and you can place your workers on those cards at like a river type thing, right? So then if you place your worker, well, the other person can't place their worker there, can there? And that's where it gets, that's how the game chooses to emulate the race aspect. And you know, it does basic worker placement stuff, change your resources for this, resources for that, score your points and win. One play, I think I really like it. I really like it, but I'm a history buff. So, like, you know, there are some history games that are good no matter what. I think of like 878 Vikings. You know, you don't have to know a lot about Vikings, another Academy game, to enjoy that game. It's like, it's just like a, you know, a kind of a conflict game. And, you know, a lot of war games, like, okay, I don't know. This could be anything. It's like, is it a good war game? This one, it's so involved. Like, it's like, you know, how much juice is going to come out of this squeeze type of thing. It's like, you know, if you're just going for the mechanisms, there's so many resources. Nine resources and they all change and whatever, whatever.
Oh my gosh.
And you have, you know, like you used to like four. and you, so like, I'm skeptical on whether, like a, you know, just someone who's sitting down, like how often are you going to meet like another history buff that wants to play a two player game with you? If you have it, God bless you. And if you're into this thing, I could wholeheartedly recommend at least off one play. Again, it's an impression. But if you are a person that is, you're the history buff and you're trying to like show the other person, they might find it a little bit dry, but it's a really good game. If you are into the history, I can really recommend to take a look. Like I said, after the first play.
Nice. Well, I mean, the space race, that's my jam.
I think you will enjoy this. Yes. I think you
right
will
up here
this.
On the ledge, I have that Lego rocket, the Saturn V rocket. Nice. I built that thing. It is amazing. And so every year I show my students. So in math, there just aren't movies for math. There's a handful and people will tell you some and whatever. Yeah. But I just went with Apollo 13. I just started showing my classes Apollo 13 and kind of focused on, like, what do people do in crisis? Like, they're really smart, but what do they do in crisis? And kind of trying to build some of those character qualities in my students as well.
Sure.
So I got a chance to show it to my daughter, Zephra, and you can actually take the Lego rocket apart, just like the real rockets back in the 60s and 70s. I mean, end of the 60s. So it's neat how it all comes apart. Now I tend to show a lot of hidden figures as well, because that has a lot of other good elements to it. But those are my two math movies. So I'm definitely excited to try One Small Step.
Yeah, I mean, it goes from the Earth to the Moon, and there's no like rocket pea shoot move. It's just like you change into resources and you kind of like move along a track. And yeah, it's, you know, like how many Euro, this is a Euro game, right? And how many Euro games are really effective at communicating whatever the theme is. But although I will say that I'm thinking about it, I don't think I've ever played a truly thickly historical Euro game before. They're usually either conflict games or, you know, you know, like you have your Newton. No, that's not, it's not Newton.
Right.
But like a really thickly historical Euro game, it's very unique. So yeah, it's not.
Yeah, I wanted to go to like the coin games.
Yeah, it's a Waro.
But they still have that. Yeah, they still have that Waro feel, like you're saying. But that's the first thing that jumps in my brain to be the most thematic, you know, in terms of that. Trying to put in all those pieces with still having mechanisms that are common, right?
Yeah, so recommendation for me so far, I need to get more plays in. I will have my full thoughts on the Dice Tower review in the next month.
Nice. All right, so I'm going to start out with a game called Cantaloupe. And this is a game
you
that
told
I want
me about this
you
game.
To play.
You told me about it. I want to play.
But I have, but we let friends borrow it. So I got to wait till they finish it and then it'll go to you.
No problem.
In terms of that. So Cantaloupe is a game. It's another Friedman. It's like Friedman. I can't remember his last name. I apologize, but it's not Friedman Freeze. and it's from Lookout Games. And it kind of plays off of those it totally is those point and click adventures from like did Lucas Games or something like that. Is that what it was?
Like Monkey Island. Yeah.
And Myst and all those. Mm-hmm. It's definitely more in the silly vein. And so, so one thing I will warn people is that it is part one of what I presume is a two-part story. So it ends on a cliffhanger. So just know that if you go to play it, it's going to end. It's like teetering for me on like between really good and great.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Okay. It's teetering between those two. Now, compared to an like unlock or an escape room, it doesn't have the puzzles of those.
Okay.
It's much more about going around and collecting items. And it has this really interesting system of like, I wish I could actually show it, although people on the podcast, I won't help them anyway, but you've got cards with like digit and letter combos, or other way around. So it'll say like R4, G7, M9, and then it has like an arrow, and you line it up with something else, and it'll give you like a 4-digit code, right? Okay. So it'll say like, oh, go to G6R4. But that'll just be on the left-hand page, because it kind of opens like the old, all the storybooks we're seeing now, you know, with the spiral bound. So it's opening like that, and then you go over there, and you've got the old school 80s red decoder, right? And then you can read that section, and it's a really small decoder. Comes with everything kind of tucked in there, and a set of 60 cards that are all like in these little tuck spots, so you can just grab them. So they do a good job making it really easy. And then there's like a pamphlet thing that folds out if you want to just take two free items that you have, because as you open each page, you might see like, oh, there's a lock and you have a key, right? And you put them together and you're like, oh, perfect. Like, makes sense. And then you check that out. But that lock may be on the page, but you may also have a key and a key ring or something like that. And then you could try to put those together to put the key on the key ring or whatever it is. And you have this extra pamphlet that you can reference to find all the things. So the whole thing is about, it's called Breaking Into Prison. And it's about this guy, Hook, who is a prior criminal, and he wants to get back at the people. So it's kind of got like a payback kind of theme to it. And then it's just full of tongue-in-cheek humor. So if you try to put two things together, like there's a section where you're like trying to get this key off a shelf, not really a spoiler. And one of the items we had was dental floss, and it's like behind the shelf. So we lined those two up, and it's like, so let me understand your plan here. You're going to make a tiny lasso and swing it across, right? Like they just kind of make fun of you for the choices that you make. So it's very funny.
Well, in those old games, it was like, okay, you have to get through the ceiling. So there is a chainsaw and a, like a, one of them church collecting bins and a belt. So it's like, you got to put the chainsaw into the church collecting thing, and then you have to tie it together with the belt, and you have to reach up into the ceiling, and you have to stand on each other's shoulders, and now you're in the ceiling. And that's how you beat Monkey Island. Is that stuff like that?
That's exactly it. Yeah. Right. There's a lot of comboing items, like, oh, when you combo these, you discard those two items, you reach in, now you get the combination of those two items.
And is that
that's exactly what you're doing?
Is that a cooperative game?
Yes. Now, so we played it with two, Kathy and I, and it worked out pretty well. She's kind of focused on the right-hand page, looking at items, giving me the codes. I'm on the left-hand page decoding. I think past two, for adults, it would be frustrating, even for kids. I can't see a whole bunch of kids. Oh, speaking of kids, it says 16 plus on it, and I wasn't sure why. It has PG-13 humor in it. Right. It has some PG-13 language, has PG-13 humor. It really isn't anything that I would consider R. There are some items you pick up, and there's one part that's just disgusting. Like, it's not bad. It's totally potty humor, but it's disgusting. so it's not something to play with your kids.
Right.
You know, maybe teenagers, you know, people would be fine with, but it's not a story meant to be played with kids. It's definitely, you know, upper class. And you also like, you get alcohol in the game, but you don't really do much with things like that. So it's not of major consequence to me, thematically, but yeah, it's fully cooperative, in terms of that, but it's really focused on that story, and the puzzles are just like, it's more, how do I get these items to go together? Right. It's like, click, try this, click, try that, click, try this, more than, oh, we really need to be thoughtful about this or clever.
There is no way that I'm not going to like this game. I love those games back in the day. I mean, we'll get to it.
Yeah. So my only complaints were, there were just parts that were like, we're stuck. We're just stuck, and we're frustrated, and you don't really know, can I turn back? You can turn pages. It gives you all the rules. So it's not that it doesn't, but you just get so frustrated, you start to kind of break your own like rules trying to figure it out. Now in the back, it does a great job giving you clues, and you actually have like a chart, like it's like A through K and 1 through 10 or whatever. And as you unlock things, it'll say, oh, mark box A2. And that will help you, because either there'll be things that say, if A2, then read this, if not, then read this. And when you go in the back to like get a hint, it will just kind of step through. It's linear, so it knows all the steps, and you just kind of keep looking for those boxes you checked off. And then, oh, this is where we stop, so this is our clue. I'm not one to avoid taking hints. It doesn't bother me. Other people I know taking hints can kind of like, I will figure this out, you know? And I would say we probably took maybe 3 to 5 hints throughout the game. And 3 or 4 of them were like, I didn't even like the puzzle or what they wanted us to do. It didn't even make sense.
Right.
There was 2 in particular that were ridiculous. The other 2 were okay. And 1 was like, oh, we totally should have gotten that. We're just dumb. So I'd say don't avoid that hint system. Mm-hmm. It tells you it's about 5 to 8 hours of gameplay. And that sounds about right to me. I think we were at 8. I think we took full 8. There's no timer. It's not an escape room. It's just enjoy the story. You get to the end and it's to be continued. But that's mm-hmm. Cantaloupe from Lookout Games. Like I said, to me, it's right in that 7.5 to 8. I haven't decided. It's almost like I want to finish the story to decide. Nice. And group the two together, you know? But really neat. I haven't seen anything like that in all these puzzle games that are coming out. So Cantaloupe.
All right. Very good. Okay. So now I'm going to get into games that I review. So these games will be have been reviewed on a Dice Tower. This is like a digest, right? If you follow me, then you know what I'm gonna say, but there's like a digest of what I've covered. So the first one, we're gonna start off with the worst one. The Umbrella Academy game. Have you heard anything about the Umbrella Academy game, Brent?
No. Other than they were making a game, and I don't even know that I guess I knew it was comic books or something. Is it graphic novels?
It's a graphic novel from Dark Horse that was converted to a Netflix show. So there's 3 years of the comic and then 2 years, and they're going to make a third of the Netflix show. Love both. I love both. So I'm like, Umbrella Academy game back. And you know, it's just one of those things. Like I did that with a Jurassic Files cooperative card game, which I didn't look at. It's like and if it's worse comes to worse, I'll move it on, sell it, whatever it is. Get a review out of it. So like, it's not going to cost me too much. Ooh. this game is bad. So I mean, gotcha. The Kickstarter had a lot of problems. So like they end up shipping a game and the rules ended up being about 65% correct and like 35% just junk, really bad. So like you had to go online, download a whole new set of rules. So that was not great. Especially the low player count. I think they really bungled the low player count. So like, okay, here's a whole new game, people. Anyway, so then it's basically war. You know, like they're selling me war. Like, you know, every character. So this the Umbrella Academy. I don't want to waste too much time, but it's an awesome like X-Men-y alternate X-Men type show, like a superhero team, dysfunctional family, all that kind of thing. So then you play a character. So you're playing like the Rumor or Vanya or Number 5, like these the very distinctive characters. But they reduce to basically one power that you use every single turn, like you know, or one every round. Right. So one power. Okay. Once you use it, that's it. The rest of it is cards that you get out of a central deck. So like that's war. So, you know, you're drawing from a central deck and then it's like the enemy is a row of cards and they have numbers 9 and you see the numbers 9, 7, 9, 6, 9. They're supposed to be enemies, but they're numbers. Gotcha. And then you have a card. Then you have a hand full of other numbers. So I'm like, I can pick which number I want to play on the number, and it's war rules. So it's like, if there's a 7 there, then beat it by 1 or try to beat it as low as possible so that you save your better cards for higher enemy attacks. And it just goes, just keeps on. And it goes round over round. So like you're doing this multiple times throughout the game, no change whatsoever, no arcing. Like there's a hit point system. So their cards can attack you, but then you heal. It's like your life points just go up and down. Up and I never felt clever. Like I always remember the Duke of Dice things, right? Does this game make me feel clever? I do not feel clever playing this game.
Yeah.
Your health is down, heal. Your health is up, play war, match the card. There's nothing clever about it. When do you use the power? Oh, this person can kill a villain or you know, okay, I'm going to take out the largest villain. there's no choice. Like, why would I do anything else? So it's, and you know, there's lots of other frustrating things about it. The reason I'm mentioning it is because I'm such a geek for IP. I'm such a geek for like, you know, sure. I get it. I so get into like the lore of stuff. You know, if I'm reading something, I'm reading it cover to cover. And so like games that have good IP, even if they're kind of like middling games, get the extra point and a half bump for me because I'm a thematic game. I get into the IP so much. This game went the opposite way. So like it was this is a, just like a flat game, and then just went because it just did, it did such disservice to the theme, which I love. I love the umbrella kind of both the comic book and the show. So complete pass from me. I gave it a 2 out of 10, which was, yeah. And the funny thing is, Brand, so this is like, you know, just kind of a meta commentary. So I put the view up on the Dice Tower, and it was probably my most positively received view. A review.
Gotcha.
It, right? Like,
like people it was just like, we're with you.
Yeah, you know, it's like, well, in the sense of like, you know, because, you know, I have a lot of Dice Tower reviews, and I'm a new person. So like, okay, a lot of people just like, oh, you're not Tom, thumbs down. Or whatever. It's just kind of like a thing that happens. Whatever, you know, get used to it. But then with this game, I think like it was like a kind of respect thing. It's like, oh, that game is garbage, and he called it garbage. So it's like, yeah, we're vibing over here. And it was, oh boy. But so that was a little bit of an interesting trip into the upside down world. I figured people would be happy to see positive reviews, not necessarily negative ones, but. Right. But yeah, this, it was a bad review, bad game. Oh man, Umbrella Academy game, complete pass.
Nice. All right, I'm gonna come at you with three games, and then I want you to tell me which one sounds the most interesting to you.
Sure.
So there'll be three relatively short reviews. So these are basically what you would call heavy Euros. No offense, I'm not saying. I'm just saying, for lack of a better term, they're heavy Euros.
Okay, like, sure.
Some of them play in the hour range, so you could argue they're medium, whatever. But I just saying, right? They're big Euros. So the first one is Cloud Age, Alexander Pfister. All right, so this is the new Alexander Pfister, and I feel so bad for Arno Steinbinder because he also designed this game, and everyone will say this is the new Alexander Pfister game. So this is from Capstone Games. So Cloud Age is a dystopian world where some cloud group, it's like C-L-O-U-D, and they burned up all the fuel, like the oil and the trees, and it's a barren wasteland. And now, because you can't really go on the ground, you like fly from city to city on these mesas or plateaus by blimp. And that's kind of what's happening. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So the game comes in like multiple formats. So there's seven chapters to a story you can play through. And that kind of teaches you the game, especially in the beginning. And then there's three scenarios. You can kind of play like a basic scenario, a mid-game scenario, or the all-in scenario,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a great way to do a Euro game, especially something that would be closer to a heavy Euro. But the one problem is people will jump into that chapter one. And if they typically like heavier games, they're going to be like, that was so basic. That was so short. This is a terrible game. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to play some of those chapters. Also, it's got story, and love Tom Vassell, but he is one to just hate on these Euro stories that I think are awesome. Like we played through Maracaibo, and I know Maracaibo has its other issues with people, but you know, game wise, that story is so good mm-hmm. in Maracaibo. It makes perfect sense. You're going around trying to heal people from diseases that are hitting the Caribbean, and you're trying to free people and all sorts of things in the story that are great. And all it does is add a little mechanism like each game. It just says, oh, put a tile over this space and add this card to the deck. Like it's mm-hmm. not trying to add a lot. It's just trying to make it so each game feels slightly different, you know? Everybody starts with an extra card in their hand, whatever it is. So this game does the same thing. So basically what's happening in the game, there's kind of these three phases. And of course, person with the most points wins. You have a little blimp. And at the beginning, you have like this deck of navigation cards. So it's kind of like a deck builder. And they're cards 0, 1, 2, and 3. There's like 1, 3, 1, 0, and a bunch of ones and twos. And so you'll be able to like produce some water with your energy. There's a lot of resources, like you were saying. Then you draw two cards. Your higher card becomes your movement. Your lower card, you can either like draw cards from the deck or produce more energy. Then you get to move based on your movement card, and there's some other choice. You're trying to land at one of these cities, but all the cities have cloud attacking. So then you need some attack value when you land there. And you may have built-in attack as you can kind of upgrade your blimp. Mm-hmm. So you could have some attack, or you might get cards. If you don't, then you can pay an energy and flip a card off the top of that navigation deck and whatever number that is. Basically, you're just trying to hit a number, and if you hit that number, you get resources that that city has. Some give you water, some give you victory points, some give you more cards, some give you a combination. And you're moving across. It's a very thin hexagonal board that goes way down a table. And as you move further down, you get more victory points by needing more attack. So it's just building in that mechanism of, oh, how can I get a lot of points at the end of the game if I move really far?
He always, what I think about, I appreciate about Fist, isn't always successful, but he incorporates a lot of movement into his games. Like, there's always some.
And it gives you choice.
Like, board progression. Like, it's not just, like, a lot of Euros, they kind of like give you the whole thing. Right. And it's like, okay, like an Uwe game will generally do that. It's like, okay, here's a whole bunch of crap. And you know, like, you know, you give the bill here. But like, you know, a Fister game at least has that kinetic sense of like, I don't have to pay attention to everything. Just make this thing move. So I haven't played Cloud Age, but you know, I appreciate that about his designs. Do I love everything about his themes and all that stuff? But this one doesn't seem to raise any problems.
Yeah, right. So then the last phase is the interesting one. You get to send a drone out to a city, and it's crazy. So one of the things you can do with the drone is just you go to a spot where you can upgrade twice. So you can upgrade your ship to get more movement or more damage. And there's these little like growth tiles. The story tells you about this person you find who's like, we can rebuild the world and we can grow trees and we can bring everything back. You know, that's kind of what the story's all about. And you can place these growth tiles that can give you resources and victory points, you know, all Euro stuff. Mm-hmm. But the other thing you can do is there are these, and this is so innovative. I'm not lying. Like, it's really innovative. And so there's these clear plastic sleeves that come in the game. And then you put these stickers over them with clouds. So this is where the cloud thing. But each cloud is different. They're totally different. And they're just in these weird collections. And the sleeves are double-sided. So every game, you're going to kind of have a different set of three clouds. And you go to these cards, and they have the four different resources: water, project cards, energy, and metal. And on your turn, you pick, what thing do I need? And you can see some of the card. It's literally obscured by clouds. It's a great Pink Floyd album if you haven't listened to it. but it's obscured, and you can, so the amount of water on that card is kind of giving you a hint as to how much water you're going to get. And then there's little things that say, oh, you get an upgrade, or, oh, you can do this navigation icon, which lets you remove a card from your deck. So you can get rid of those zeros and ones from your deck to kind of increase your deck. And at first, it just feels frustratingly random. Like, this is a silly mechanic. I'm in this Euro game, and I'm randomly trying to figure it out. But the more you play, the more we love it. Like, you're picking up those sleeves, and you're like, okay, I really need water. And do I think I see that icon? I can't really tell. Mm-hmm. And you're making these picks. And then after you pick, everybody else in the game gets to pick a spot that they want to be on. And it kind of goes around the table, so you get less choice. And then you reveal the card, and you actually get that card in your deck. So it might have like a 2, 3, or 4 for movement. So you're upgrading your deck and you're drawing more tiles. There's like a whole bunch to it. It's so good. Like, that mechanic has just grown and grown and grown on me from something that I didn't understand to now I understand what's going on. And mm-hmm. It's so much more interesting. So that's that. Then there's all these project cards, which are your classic Euro terraforming Mars. You name the game that's got a bunch of cards, and you can play all these upgrade cards.
Underwater Cities is the correct answer on that one.
Yeah, there you go. So you're playing all these cards in front of you and gaining all these bonuses. And then you get to the end of the round or the end of the game, and boom, you figure out your points, and that's who wins. One of the parts I really like, we've been playing two-player a ton, as so many people. We've played 5 chapters now. We streamed one on the channel. I think we streamed chapter 4. It's like an hour. It's like an hour and 15 minutes. It's mm-hmm. nice and short. 4-player, it's probably going to run closer to 2. But it's not, it's like a lot of think in a short amount of time, which I really enjoy a whole mm-hmm. bunch. So that's Cloud Age.
Does it have a solo?
Yep.
Yes! That's what I'm talking about.
What is the solo mode? I played it. Oh, yeah, it's pretty basic. It just tells you, it really simply programs, there's a little, like, tile, and it tells you what action the other player is going to do in that third round. So it just mm-hmm. programs what they're going to do and what you get to do based off of what they did. But you don't have to run a bot.
Cool.
And then you're trying to score points and get to a certain point threshold, which is mm-hmm. okay. Very cool. All right, next one is probably the biggest.
Aha.
Braga Caput Regni. So this is... from Vladimir Suhi and Rio Grande and his company Delicious Games. And this is kind of his follow-up to what you just alluded to, Underwater Cities.
Sure.
So this is Praga. This is Prague in Czech Republic. Is that what it is now?
Good question.
Feel really bad that I don't know that. And it's some century in which you are building the city. And again, it's a point score, a certain number of rounds. The whole game is built around this thing, this dial. It's like a wooden dial that spins around, and you're grabbing these project tiles off of it, and it tells you you can do one of these two actions. Mm-hmm. So you pick one of those two tiles, and then you choose which action you want to do, and then the space on the wheel says, oh, you also get this bonus. And then you can do a whole bunch of actions. So you can either kind of move down this road where you get bonuses, the King's Road, or there's a cathedral and there's a military barracks. I don't remember what it's called. And you can kind of move up in those, kind of gaining renown, whether it be in the church or in the military ranks. And those are going to score you end game bonuses. And then you're like collecting resources on these wheels where you can kind of get upgrades, and you can harvest gold and harvest is a weird term. Gather gold, I guess it's taxation, and stone in a quarry.
I've played so many Euros, I did not like register harvest gold. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then there's a whole big board that's spread out in front of you where you can like play tiles to the village that's around it, or you can grab tiles and add them to like your, I think citadel might be the term. So you're like building up a citadel and you can upgrade your actions. This thing is just that classic, like, good luck. It goes in 200 directions. Every time you play, you can go for a different strategy. There's bonuses galore. You've got to slow down if you're a player like me, because you might miss a bonus. Mm-hmm. But man, Jason, it just hits that sweet spot for me. Like, nice. I just love it. It would scare me at four players because it's running an hour and a half, 2 hours with two players.
Oh,
it has a solo, but it's going to go in at 3 hours. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. You'll benefit a little, because as people don't pick those actions, they move up the wheel, and mm-hmm. Now you can like get them and gain victory points. So it gives you that whole thing. Whereas the ones at the end of the line, you actually have to pay gold to take them. So with more players, it's going to make that more interesting than two players, where it's just back and forth. Nobody's really ever getting a victory point. Maybe somebody gets one throughout the game. But with more players, people are going to be ignoring actions. So that's where it would be interesting. And then, like, in that city, you're placing tiles, and as you surround the like marketplaces, the person with the most like gains a bonus, and everybody else gets a smaller bonus. So being that first place in a multiplayer game would, you know, be a bigger deal in terms mm-hmm. of all that. Yeah, I'm not going to go into all those mechanisms and all those things you can gain, but it's just that turn where like you gain these like windows, and there's like silver windows and gold windows, and you can spend those to like take another turn. So there's that whole element of like, oh my gosh, when am I going to do my like take another turn mega Euro mm-hmm. act planned out action to block that player and get this and score all the points. And then you can earn like end game ways to like score a bunch of points. Like, ooh, for all the gold you have saved up, you can gain victory points. Mm-hmm. So it's got kind of all those things in it. So yeah, this is a game like you're choosing to sit down and play. This is not one you want to stumble across. Game, yeah. You want to make sure you know that you're about to play this game. But it's really good. I think I still like Underwater Cities better. I like Underwater Cities kind of, the complexity comes down as you play it a little bit more, and now you're really just focused on how do I build my engine. This one doesn't have as much of an engine. It feels like you're trying to run three or four small engines rather than like this big engine of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But I really like it a lot. And good. Both of these would have been on my top 10 of 2020 if they count. They're those weird released in Europe in 2020 right. and in America in 2021. But I got one more.
Brent warned me about this, by the way. He over here he did tell me about this.
Expert level. Do you see that right there?
Yeah, I do, Jason? See it. I see it.
Uh-huh. I have played this multiple times, which means I am an expert.
Got it.
This Allertal, is
yeah, there you go.
Uwe Rosenberg. Okay. Mm-hmm. This game is in a big old box. Looks like Feast for Odin. No way. It's probably the lightest of the three games that I just showed you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really simple. So it focuses on, it's again from Lookout Games. It focuses on the Hallertau region in Germany, which I guess was like a beer country for a while. Mm-hmm. And so it's in like the 1850s, and you're trying to surprise build your farm and kind of work your way through. The game is so satisfying. It's so satisfying. So it's a worker placement where we're kind of using common workers. So everybody has workers that are these little cubes, and each action space has a space for one cube, two cubes, and three cubes. So you get a certain number of cubes at the start of the round. And if somebody takes a spot, then you have to put two cubes on the spot to get the next space and three cubes. Each spot is like, hey, gather a bunch of resources, or you can sow your veggies and put them out there. And you've got a veggie board. Mm-hmm. You've got a board for this craft house, which is basically what the whole a community building, which is what the whole game is really about. And then you've got this other like farming one where you're taking care of sheep. And at first, when you gather sheep, you have no pen for them. So they're just wandering around. And if you don't build a pen in time or kind of push them into the pen that you built, they just die off. So you have that like threat mm-hmm. of doing that. Without going in, because I've been talking a bunch with too much, the game really focuses on two things. There's a whole bunch of cards, and there's interchangeable decks, like they've been doing for Agricola and a bunch of the games. Nusfjord had this, where you can change out the decks, and they change up the way the game works. The really interesting mm-hmm. ones are every round, you have a card face down on your sheet board, and you get that card, and that can be a cool, like, spend 2, 3, or 4 to gain 5, 6, or 7 of this. So you can kind of choose that. And then there's these bonus cards that if you can achieve some level, you put them out, and every round they give you a resource, mm-hmm. which is really neat. But the main focus of the game is this community building that you're trying to literally push to the right. And you're upgrading these 5 craftsman slots. So it's like a leather worker and a stone worker and a food place and whatever the things are from town. I don't even have the right names. And so at the end of every round, you have to spend the goods that are on there to slide those little buildings over. And once you slide all 5 of them over, you can move your community building up. And that's going to increase the number of workers you have for the next round. And eventually, like, the window will show points and you're going to get a lot of victory points. It goes like 18, 34, 50, 70. So you're like really trying to push that building over. But the thing is, each round, like the first round, you only need one good to slide those buildings. But as the town gets bigger, in the 6th round, you need 6 goods mm-hmm. to slide those buildings over. But they'll give you bonuses. Like if you spend 3 different goods, then you have to use less. So you're trying to just balance. Yeah, it's super interesting though. It's great. It plays really smooth, even with higher player counts. I wouldn't be afraid of this game at 4. You know, again, it's running an hour with 2 players, but this would not surpass 2 hours with 4 players who are in it, who are playing at a normal speed. There's everything simultaneous except the worker placement round. And then there's like 10 steps in a phase, but it's just because they're spelling it out so well to you. Mm-hmm. And then when everybody moves their community building up, that's all simultaneous. And that's like a majority of your turn. Yeah, that's Hallertau. I've played with 2. Have I played with 3 of the different decks now? I've played solo 2-player, and we streamed a 3-player on our channel where I forgot to focus the camera. So if you want to watch 2 hours of a non-focused Euro game, mm-hmm. you can check that out. But it was cool because we got a chance to play with Brian, and they've moved out of our house. So just getting a chance to play a game with Brian again is good because I don't see him nearly as much anymore. So he came over. We're like, what the heck? We'll stream it. But it was really about us playing the game. So again, people could go check out like 5-10 minutes of the video to see what the game looks like. It probably didn't come out so well since I forgot to autofocus the camera. So,
oh, well.
So what sounds interesting to you of those 3 Euro games?
Oh, man. Definitely not Praga. No. I mean, I think Underwater,
I don't see that being your style.
No. Underwater Cities is a top 15 game for me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think it actually edged ahead of Terraforming Mars. Like, I think they're both kind of right there. I love card-based entry builders. I love that. And like, if you're going to give me that's about the top end of what I'll do unless it's like a super thematic game, which is very rare. That's very rare. I think that Praga is going to be a little bit like a buster for me. Fister games, like, it's like, I know I mentioned before about the movement. I it's more like I appreciate it. Like, I appreciate that it's like I can see what's happening. Like, for whatever reason, when I get to the actual table, because there's like, you know, there's like seven things going on. There's like a deck building aspect, and there's this and that. Like, it never coheres for me. You know, it, a lot of times, and I'm not a Euro guy, so it's like I'm not the right person to ask about that. But just like, you know, what am I interested in? So like, by elimination, I guess I'm stuck with the UA game. I do want to play Nuzfjord. I think I've heard that Nuzfjord is like the, like, if you want like distilled Uwe at like a decent little weight, like that, that's the one. So maybe that's the one I would try before Halatau, but you know, if you're teaching it, I'm going to play it. That's what's going on.
I think Halatau is right on that same page with Nuzfjord. I can't remember. I feel like Nuzfjord was a touch shorter in its length, and solo is tricky. That's the nice part with these that have the solo. If that was what you wanted to do, is that since you don't have any of that downtime of other people,
right?
And this game scales so well because there's four quadrants to the worker placement board, and in a four-player game, at the end of every round, you just remove the top worker placement space in every spot. So you just clear out one spot in each one. In a three-player game, you draw a card and you clear out three of those. In a two-player game, you draw a card and you clear out two of those. And in a one-player game, you draw a card and clear out one. It's like the easiest scaling of all time, right? Like, just boom, just clear one section. So in a solo game, if you fill up a section, you might just be out of luck for the next turn, but this space will fill up and then it's evenly matched. So works really well. Yeah, I'm intrigued on Cloud Age if you would enjoy it with just, it's just a crazy mishmash of simple mechanics, and I wonder if you would enjoy that, even though Fister isn't your jam.
Yeah, like, I just, the mishmash of mechanics, I kind of tend towards the more elegant stuff. I like when games have boiled down to simple core actions. Like, for me, like, Underwater Cities is a simple core action. Like, it's basically worker placement card play. Like, I know what I'm going to be doing. Like, I have a heck deck of cards. I'm going to play them. I'm going to play, you know, use them and play, or, you know, have the workers in there. And like, it feels simple, even though the game itself is complex and you're building your engine, you have to maximize everything, but the core action is very understandable. But like, in a Fister game, like, the core action, like, or it's one of some of the other games, like Nine Phases. I know that, like, they break that up because to make it easy, but for whatever reason, like, when it's a game has nine phases, that doesn't register as easy in my brain, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what Halatau has, but it is just worker placement and a bunch of cards in your hand. I mean, that's it. And that sounds like Underwater Cities to me.
Sure.
The Uwe theme of farming is just, you know, for some people, just a snooze fest. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, sure.
Cool. Well, thanks for letting me review three in a row. I just figured let's throw all the heavy Euros together and then.
Sure. This was back in the Every Night is Game Night days. We used to have a segment called Hot and Heavy Euros. And I would just let my pod partner, Anthony, just talk about Euros. He had such a great time. It made him so happy. And it makes me happy to make other people happy. So, like, if you're happy, Brant, I'm good. Okay, so I'll hit you with, I don't review heavy games, people. I will review one longer game in a bit, but let me give you two, a palate cleanser over here, two short games, both from TGG Games. So the first one is called Duffers. So we're going from like heavy Euro thing to like a silly golf deck builder. So it is a golf themed game. And it's basically a deck of cards. So you have your starter hand, and your starter hand tends to be like, you know, like putts, right? You know, or like, you know, either putts or strokes. So like, you know, I have a 100 yard stroke, very, very simple, right? Multi-use cards. Like, you can either play it to buy better cards, and the upgrade card comes out of a river. So it's like, you know, random, and, you know, you kind of like at the whim of the river, so to speak. But then you have a phase where you're trying to actually make a hole. And what you're doing is you have to add up the yardage on the nine different holes that are out. You hit any 9 yards. So, like, let's say, you know, the short holes, 150 yards. You got to put your hand together so that it is 100, you know, whatever's like, you know, 60, 60, 20, and then a putter. So, like, you have to play that, and then it goes back in your, you know, you go back to your deck. So you have to get it within a certain amount of strokes. So, like, if you use too many cards, then it's multiple strokes. So, like, you want, like, big shots. Like, you know, you want to save up for them big cards. 500 yards, pow! to go off of the big ones. And there's actually
Happy Gilmore style.
Yeah. and so, I mean, so there's actual strategy here, like in the sense that like you can, this, if you want to, like you can go for quick strikes, like go like, you know, build a very quick deck that can get your the short holes, or you can kind of just save up, do the kind of engine quote unquote building thing. It's not an engine builder, but like, you know, build up a couple of like utility cards that get you the bigger cards so that you can be the first to the bigger holes, which has more points, but it takes you longer to get there, right? So you can kind of split off of that. And mixing you up as an event deck, so like when you actually play your cards to go for a hole, you pull for an event deck and all sorts of crazy stuff can happen. So like you can add another 100 yards to your stroke, oh my god, gust of wind, or like I think like a raven could come and steal your ball.
Gotcha.
It's like, okay, the game is not even trying to make it like strategic or anything. It's tactical fun, right? It is deck building tactical fun with a really, really cute theme. Friendly for families. And if you're looking for that kind of thing, like a deck builder, I know people like love deck builders, right? Suggest me deck builders. And if you want a deck builder, like with your family, I think this is a really solid, choice. This is Duffers. My big thing was I was very excited because it said 1-4, right? So great solo mode, solo deck builders. There's actually not a ton of those, like a really good deck builder, right? This is some, but like not a ton. It's actually the solo play is a completely different re-engineered game. It is not a deck builder. It is Klondike Solitaire. So gotcha. They basically take
everything out
like half the game, give you basically the club cards, and you end up playing the club cards in like Klondike Solitaire style, so that when you hit the yardage off of like 4 or 5 cards or whatever, then you score and then do whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on, people. It says solo deck builder on the box. You know, that's what I want to do. So that didn't throw me so much. I was disappointing as a solo player. But the 2-4 is fun. And you know, it has a chance to stick around for me for like Uncle Phil, who comes over, who likes golf, and it's like, okay, let's just play something fun. But for the most part, for 2-4 players, I recommend Duffers. So the other one that I wanted to review, unless you had any response to that, Brandon, I know you're not much of a, like, that kind of, like, just rip roll. Yeah, I mean, you're an Omni gamer. I know you like a lot of stuff, but, like, it's that one just doesn't seem like it would hit you as much. What do you think?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I barely played any heavy Euros during 2020, and these three I've played in the last 2 months, like just as they kind of showed up, even last month, I guess, because they all came out in 2021. Mm-hmm. So I was totally on the other end playing so many two-player battle games, you know? Of course, that's what we're sort of card games and battle. I got into Legion and Armada and all that kind of Star Wars stuff this year. In terms of that. So it's funny how I've kind of swayed away and now I'm like swaying back. So that's where my Omni game is going right now. It's kind of like, instead of always consuming everything, I'm like swaying to things at certain times. Right. That makes sense. That one sounds cool. I was actually thinking it would be neat if it was like putt-putt, if it was miniature golf themed. It feels like it's a little more whimsical, right? Like it just feels like it could be more whimsical and it could be like, oh, the ball hits the, you know, the fan, whatever that, you know, that's right. Going windmill that's going around and all that kind of stuff. Like that would feel a little bit more like putt-putt and be a little more family in terms of all that. But I guess you have a lot less shots in miniature golf. So
I think they wanted the yardage,
par 3, par 4, par 5.
Yeah, they wanted the yardage effect. They wanted like the idea of you know, you like the strokes, right? You could kind of do the mini golf, but like I think they wanted like, you know, big yardage, 600 yards. Then you get a lot more design space in an area like that. Like you have to, like at the end of the day, mini golf is like, what thing am I going to hit it through? And the things are different, but you're hitting it through a thing.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, so that was Duffer. That's a cool game. Very cool game. 7 out of 10 for me. So the game that I enjoyed more, I'll talk about it in a second, is called Regicide. Regicide is a variant of a playing cards. So it's just playing cards. Like you can play Regicide with the rules off of a 52 card deck with two jokers. And it's basically gamer solitaire. So solitaire is not for gamers, right? Cool gamers, right? Gamers, for those of you listen to podcasts, you just did a scare quotes. So in a sense of like, you know, gamers want agency. Gamers want real choice. Gamers want to feel clever. And in Clarence Solitaire, there's no room to feel clever. It's really at the mercy of deck. It's just like kind of breezy, easy, breezy, good time. This one is a solitaire game. It is co-op too. And a co-op works pretty good, but like it feels like a solitaire game for gamers. There's choice. So what you're doing is they've taken out the kings, queens, and jacks, and they put them in a pile. So like you fight through the jacks first, the queens, and then the kings, regicide, right? So then they have point values, and you use the rest of your deck to kind of like beat each card. So you beat the jack goes in your deck, you goes in your common, and you pull a jack. Now it works for you. You beat the king, you beat the queen, whatever it is. So then the cards basically, you know, you lay them down and it's like, okay, I'm going to, you know, 9, 6, and you're trying to add up to beat a certain number, which is a jack, but there's powers. This is where the gamer part is. So like if you play a diamond, you draw 6 cards. It's the only way you can draw. If you play a spade, that's the paladin, you can defend. So like the card's going to attack you, but if you have a spade down, won't attack you as much. And the heart's heel brings your discard pile back into your draw deck. And so you're deciding, oh man, the decisions. I love this game. I love like the decisions here of like, okay, are the clubs double your damage? So like, the barbarian. So like, do I play the club, try to really, you know, make a big dent, but that leaves me, open. If it does damage to me, then I have to discard all my cards. Am I going to be stuck? Is this the right time to play a draw card? Should I hold off on the draw card until the next turn? And if you've played like a good solitaire, like just, you know, having that experience of just like a easy breezy solitaire game, but with choice, sign me up. I still play this game. It's I have like a cluster of games that I play at night. Like, you know, okay, I'm done, right? No more reviews. I read a lot, no more reading, no more whatever. I'm just going to put on some music and play something, right? Something that I
just
put
like,
on my
bed. It's like your mage night, just 6 hours. Just an easy breezy mage night play,
but like a Oniverse game, right? Or like I like Tiny Epic Quest for some reason. I really like just a breezy. I know it's a little bit longer, but I just like it. But like there's a certain like a pantheon of games, and Regicide Slays right in there. The easy breezy choices, but easy breezy but real choices, really fun. Regicide,
nice.
That was awesome. That one got an 8 out of 10 for me.
Nice. Do you know who that publisher is?
TGG Games. They're not. They haven't been around too long. But they were nice enough to provide a couple of copies. Just, you know, pretty excited. They picked up Mr. Cabbage Head's Garden.
I haven't played.
They picked up a lot of stuff from Side Room, so like Orchard and Black Sonata. So a lot of fun little games.
Those are all games that I've wanted to play, but they're just like tricky to come by. So maybe
this is a bigger publisher. I think they're a game store that kind of like converted into a publisher for their own games. They're kind of like instantiated in the hobby. You could probably, you know, they're going to line up some reprints of like those type of games. So definitely worth a shot. Regicide, but you can rail Regicide with just deck playing cards. So if you want to check it out, just download the rules and you're good to go.
Yeah. Awesome. All right.
So that's 2. I couldn't make it to 3.
Oh, did you have a third?
Oh no! My third one doesn't go along with it at all. So I'm just gonna save that one.
So this is probably the most thematic game I have, and the theme is super interesting. So this is
Few and
Cursed from Rock Manor Games.
Sure.
So again, this is. It's funny, I get to do the same thing now. This is a game we streamed on our channel. But it's the same thing. It's recapping.
It's just a digest, people.
Giving the people the review.
Don't even look at our other content. Just follow this one right here.
There you go. So I played Western Legends. Is that game? Colossal?
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I played that one. And I totally get, like, there are people that are just so into Western. And that one is so fun to them. And it's very sandboxy. Do whatever you want.
Not me.
I just didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. It very much reminded me of that Zaya Legends of Adrift system. Mm-hmm. And that's what I feel like. I'm just drifting and doing whatever. Now, I get it. If I had a group and I was able to play those games 6 times and each time I could try a different thing, I can see where people are going with those. But it never clicked for me. But this is that like Western horror theme.
Yep.
But the horror is at my level because I am not like an October horror person. I do not go out and seek out horror movies. That's mm-hmm. not my thing. But if you give me like minor level of horror, right? Like, I guess it would be a PG-13 level or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, of horror. I enjoy that. Like kind of that, oh no, what are we going to do? This is spooky. You know, that kind of element. Whatever, or like a Gremlins, I guess, which is really a comedy, I know, and or really a Christmas movie, I guess. But so Western Legends, Few and Cursed is that. And it's really like a Euro game in terms of that. So what's happening is you're in this town, and there's eventually going to be like four monsters, like giant monsters that are going to spawn. And from the town you're in, there's kind of four paths that jut out on the board. And you're traveling through like canyons and deserts. And I can't remember what the third, ancient ruins, I think, are the other ones. And then you can get to these like, you know, spirit, you know, infested cities or whatever, ruins where there's special things that happen. Mm-hmm. So on your turn, you're either out in the wilderness or you're in the city. If you're in the city, you can either like go get a job or you can go like buy a bunch of stuff from the market. And then if you're out in the wilderness, you draw an encounter card and kind of a random thing happens to you. The generic wildernesses, I don't really like those ones. But the if you're at like one of the special locations, the name locations, you draw a card from the special deck and it gives you like three options of what you want to have happen. And they're pretty interesting. Like, hey, do you want to just randomly add two cards to your hand this turn by giving up some health? Or do you want to fill up your bullets on your gun because you kind of count your bullets? So they give you really interesting choices there. I like that piece. The best part of the game is the next step. It's so simple. It's called Improvise. And it's a deck builder, but you draw two cards off of the central deck. You look at them and you add one to your hand and you discard the other.
Okay.
You add it to your hand. So you're going to use it that right. turn. It's so Western theme. To me, that's an awesome theme. Like, right? You just hear like the gunslinger and the right? You just hear that in the background. You're like, oh man, which of these two cards? And the cards are really cool. I have a little bit of negative that there's like four copies of each card in that deck. So the first time I was playing, especially, I felt like I just kept drawing the same options. You also have the chance that you could draw two of the same and you don't have a choice, but whatever. It's still right. super fun. But I just love that. Now you get that because you have four cards and now you get that fifth card. And now you're spending those. There's movement points and it takes different movement points. And then there's just like attack power. And the way the game works is there's kind of like generic minions that are out there. I think of them like cultists in Ascension. You can just kill them anytime. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the most wanted. And then there's those, once you kill enough of the most wanted, you like empty a deck every time you kill one. There's four decks. And mm-hmm. you know, they're only like six or seven cards thick. When you get to the bottom, a monster pops up and that mm-hmm. monster's going to have like 20 health and a big bonus if you take it down. And often the thing you're trying to get is water, which is the money currency. So you can go buy more stuff and you can upgrade. So you can get like a hat that adds, you know, to your damage, or you can get a bulletproof vest or whatever it is. And you can get a horse. So you get free movement every turn, mm-hmm. Cool stuff like that. And then, grit is the thing that is victory points. And there's kind of cool, like triggers for grit as people move along the path. Like you'll spawn another monster if you get to a certain spot and whatnot. It's really fun. Again, everything's simultaneous except when you actually play your cards and move around the board. But you like do the market and the encounters simultaneously. You do improvise simultaneously, so it keeps the game moving. Mm-hmm. And then I think once three of the four big monsters have been killed, that ends the round. Oh, there's also artifacts. You can go get cool artifacts, which give you victory points, and they add like a cool card to your deck that will give you like a totally special ability. So it's kind of playing on that like mystic element of right. Western. In terms of all that.
Yeah, that's like the Chupacabra type.
like
Grimslingers. Grimslingers was a game from Greenbar a couple years ago, which I actually enjoyed, but Greenbar really kind of dumped on the production of it. Like there was additions and, you know, but you had to have the previous edition in order to play the next edition because they didn't want to put like a whole new game. So they just released like another rule set. You had to, you didn't know which rule book you were following. Yeah. They really kind of, it just like, you know, I'm not exactly sure what happened to that game, but it was a really cool core concept. And it was the same thing about like that magical Western type deal. So this one sounds like a little bit of a just okay, a cleaner design. I know Mike Nade is like the guy at Rock Matters, like a million people that are helping him out. So it seems like it'd be a nice clean vision of a game.
Yeah, so there's a couple other cool things. So first off, I have the expansion too. And so I think there's six asymmetrical characters. They all come with different starting decks. And they have different powers and bullets. And then you can get cursed in the game. And when you get to it, like you have a curse level. When you get to your curse level, you flip your card over. And now you're like more powerful. But you take curse for doing things. And once you're like at your curse level, you actually take damage instead. And if you die, there's a big negative. So that's a cool thing. And then you can like pay to uncurse yourself. Mm-hmm. So there's that element. And then a really fun element is when you go through your deck, that triggers that you've exhausted yourself and some horse will drag you home and back to the city and you reset your deck and you go back to the city. So if you've been trying to progress out, which I think is just a fun mechanism of like, oh, you just go through your deck once and then it gets reshuffled. Like, and you have to kind of start back over. So you're kind of like trying to build through your cards. Mm-hmm. Works out really neat. Now here's where I'll let you down. The solo mode.
I've heard it's poop.
It's just they completely remove grit. Mm-hmm. And so all the cards and jobs and monsters that give you grit are irrelevant. And all you want to do is get water. And then you're just trying to defeat those monsters as they come out. So it's just more tactical planning. And it just removes like it just, oh, I don't want these things anymore because I don't want grit because grit doesn't do anything. So that was a real shame. And then the co-op, they almost try to do the opposite. You start with grit and you lose grit and you're trying to win before you lose all that grit. It's playable, but it's just not interesting. Like it's unfortunately one of those games where they put a solo and a co-op because that's great to add, but it's just not that game. So if you're going to play this multiplayer verse, it's phenomenal. But if you want it for those other two modes, I couldn't recommend it. I just wouldn't tell people to go get it for those. But again, I think it's another one that would have been in my top 10 games had I played it. I played it like December 30th or something after we did the top 10 games of the year. Sure. But it's really good. Really fun. So I enjoyed that one a lot. The Few and the Curse from Rock Manor Games.
All right. So I have a couple more games. So the Bran has not reviewed this one yet. So that's why I wanted to throw it onto the Portal Gaming Podcast here. You know, it's a lot of coverage on, you know, where I am, you know, Dice Tower and One Stop Co-op Shop. So forgive me for, you know, crossing the streams over here, but this is really for the Portal people. So this one's Aetherfields. Aetherfields, the Awakened Realms game. And Awakened Realms is known for their big games, right? It's so like you take the Grail and the Wave 2 just shipped, but like actually I was like, I have too much big adventure in my life. So like I had back Wave 2 and I just sold it without even opening it. I couldn't do it. Tate the Grail's good. I like Tate the Grail, but like I had too much.
Gotcha.
I just have too much. So much. But anyway, so I did play Aetherfields, right? Because Aetherfields, like I'm a psychology guy. And not necessarily like a Freudian dreams guy, but like I love when games give me story and give me, you know, like dream stuff. So that's what it is. So then Aetherfields is a dream world and you are playing a character who has woken up, has basically no memory of what's going on. And so kind of Seventh Continent style, you are playing through these card-based missions. And, you know, when you hit a spot on, so you build your map out of cards in the main game anyway. When you're in like a discrete dream. So then you build your map out of cards and then the cards are grid based and you have numbers. So like you go to the number, you look it up in a storybook, boom, something happens. Usually something terrible. sometimes there's visual clues as to like, you know, what numbers to look for, what not to look for, but not always. It's just kind of throwing you in there. So you're, you know, you usually have a mission to accomplish and the missions usually taking like an hour ish. And they're random. They don't really connect. It's like, okay, sometimes you're in a funhouse And then the next mission, you'll be in a abandoned school, or the next mission, you'll be on a train or something. And there's kind of a story. And you do, like, I think the story is located in your character. So your character is going to evolve over time. You're going to complete missions. You're going to build, you have a really dinky deck. And there's a simple mechanism to get better cards, but, you know, not really. Like, it's, the cards are really like they're really the engine to get the story going. You're not here for like a deck builder, you know, even though the game says there's a deck builder. So if you go in here thinking, oh, I'm going to play a deck building game, mm-mm. It's just cards are just kind of getting there and help you like kind of move the story along. So you're playing all these missions, and the missions are really cool. Some are frustrating. Sometimes you get like, you know, like kind of walled off at it, and you get like in a frustrating loops. But for the most part, the stories are cool. And I think that's going to be the where you enjoy this game. Where people have a frustration with this game is that there's another phase. Between the missions, you actually have to play stuff. If you've played Kingdom Death Monster, there's like the out, and then you come back to the town and you're doing stuff. And then you go out into the town. If you play any JRPG, you go out into the dungeon and then come back to the town. So they, right. In Etherfields, they gamify the town phase. And so you're going along this kind of, again, card-based track, but it's much smaller, and the encounters are much more limited. And the potential enemies are much more limited. So like you can literally face the same enemy multiple times per round. Same enemy. That's not good.
Ugh.
Oh boy. And I think, so like when you see, if you're watching reviews of Etherfields, I think people react really strongly to that. Like the biggest complaint about this game is that it has like a lot of fat. A lot of bloat, useless grind. Mm. And that's what they're talking about. That town phase where you can meet multiple and like meet the same enemy multiple times, or have like an event card that just like sends you back five spaces. Ugh. Or something, right? So then it depends on what your fun is, right? If your fun is story and theme, and if you don't mind either house ruling or somehow yada yada-ing that town face to get to the good stuff, which is the stories, then this game is excellent. Excellent. Like, better than Seventh Continent for me. More interesting. More, because Seventh Continent, they kind of roped you in that lost land story. And it deviated a little bit, but like at this end of the day, you're playing that lost land story. Variations on a theme. Here, it's like all different stuff. And lots of stuff, lots of different things can happen. So that the dreams are cool. That dream world. Ooh. be okay with house ruling that. Or yeah. Like, I think like the Awakened Realms, because they heard the feedback on it and they're like, we're introducing a variant where you can skip the whole phase and you just get like a card that gives you random resources.
Got it.
Which I don't want to do that either. Just like make it cooler. There's a way to make a town phase cool. Like if you played Final Fantasy, like there's some pretty cool adventures that you could do, like fighting the shopkeeper and, you know, like to advance like the story in a miniature way that way. Don't just like wipe it all out. Whatever. It's a game that I really enjoyed. I've kind of like, I don't have it anymore because I played through a huge chunk of the missions and I'm like, okay, I'm good. I had my time with this. Got my many, many hours of play. It's at least like 20, 30 plus. So that's a good game to me. So I just want to kind of lay that out there. Etherfields is an 8 out of 10 for me. But people who had their problems, I definitely understand.
Nice. Yeah, Awakened Realms has been interesting for me. I've played a few. Were they, what was the like Titans dude on the map? Or the
Nemesis?
Greek gods? No.
Lords of Hellas.
Lords of Hellas. I don't know. I apologize if I had the wrong
one.
That one was interesting.
That one was not that good.
I played it, you know, yeah, it was okay. Great. And then I played Nemesis. So actually, I don't actually know where I am now, but I've run through the top 100. And I've played, as far as I know, I've played all 100 games on BG, the top 100 games on BGG.
Crazy.
And Nemesis was the one that stuck out.
Crazy.
That I had not played. And so I borrowed it and played it solo. And I beat it instantaneously. Mm. I discovered that I was doing the draw things out of the bag wrong. So I was like, okay, I feel like I haven't played it. So let me go back and play multiplayer. and I died on the third round, like, tremendously. Like, some giant monster summoned, hit me. I tried to run into another room. It followed me. It hit me again, and I was dead in two kills. And then you're, like, out of the game. So that one didn't really work so well for me. I think my only other cheat there is I don't think I've ever played TI4, mm-hmm. but I played TI3 at least 30 times. So I feel like I've played TI4, even though I haven't played TI4. But yeah, Tainted Grail has always been the one that stuck out to me in terms of wanting to play through and build through mm-hmm. in character. But yeah, they're tricky. They're tricky to get my hands on to be able to play without straight up backing the Kickstarters, which I'm not against. I typically don't back Kickstarters.
You can't back anything. You can't back all that stuff. I mean, yeah, I like Tainted Grail a lot. Like a game like Etherfields had much more story and much more like exploration. Like Tainted Grail had exploration, but like exploration for the sake of what? Exploration for the sake of like finding the same thing that you found five cards ago. And I think Tainted Grail was much more of a hand management. It made you pay attention to your hand more. And the world was kind of there to enable a vague sense of exploration, but like, you know, how to put your kind of combo things together in order to be able to get big effects. Etherfields just kind of flips that and says, you have just enough of a hand to get you from A to B on this map and enjoy your play on the map, you know? And I like that. For me, that's a preference thing for me. Like, I love clever card play, but if I'm going to play a big adventure for a long time, I need some story.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about story then.
Yeah. Let's do it. Forgotten Waters. Yeah.
There we go. Forgotten Waters. So I had played this a while ago, a four player. I feel like this came out like when COVID hit. Seemed like maybe a little after that. So I had played it and, you know, pirates, whatever, story game. I'll get into it. This game is just, forget clever. Clever doesn't matter. This game is so infused with fun. It's unbelievable. Like, right from the beginning, you get a random character sheet and you play Mad Libs.
Right.
Right? So you pick a bunch of words, you fill in the blank, and then later as you tell your story, it's going to come back and do that Mad Libs. So it's a bunch of random pirate adventures. You're all on a boat. I don't know if it's a semi-co-op or a co-op. I think it's a co-op. And it's you semi-co-op. Just can do pirate things, but you all win or lose. So from what I've seen, maybe
you all lose.
That's a good point. Yeah, you all lose, and maybe you all win. Mm-hmm. So that's it's interesting on that front. But the app that runs this game is so exactly what you want from an app from a game. Right. It storytells, and the voice actors are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And the stories are funny. And just at the moment where they think you think they're telling you a serious story, they jab you with that extra wit. And it's great. Mm. So I actually got a chance to play this again. And I played it. This sounds super scary. I played it with seven people. But it was two families. So it was just two families where we had seven people and we were able to quarantine before and after. Cause I got put in teaching. I got put in this quarantine from Thanksgiving to January 12th. Mm. So in there, I didn't even see my family, anybody. So it was just one time we saw this family played. It actually worked pretty well with seven players. It wasn't the flow of the game that was the problem. It was that everybody couldn't see all the actions with the one book in the center, because it's basically worker placement on a timer. With seven people and with kids, we didn't really do the timer, but we didn't let people read what they could do. We just said, boom, you know, place your thing and then you're going to have to do. But then somebody was responsible for reading all the things that everybody could do, and that slowed it down just a little bit. Mm-hmm. But honestly, not much. At the end of the day, we had four adults, three kids, and essentially the three kids didn't really enjoy it. It was too much. It was too long. We had to play over two sessions, which gives you a save, which was awesome, because that's my biggest problem with these plaid hat games is they try to make these family things, but then they take 2.5 hours, like stuff Fables. It, you know, it took an hour and 45 minutes, and you can't get a kid to hang on that long. I can't get a kid to hang on that long.
No, that is not.
But this one,
yeah,
this one has a clear break at 1 hour, which is perfect. We're coming back. We'll play later. Yeah, it's just a whole lot of fun. You're just riding the story. You're just going to make silly choices because you want to make the silly choices. You're going to see what happens. You're rolling a die, and then you can use fate to re-roll the die, and you're upgrading things and crossing out, and you're just waiting for that moment you get to read your story. And we were doing accents and role-playing the whole thing. And, of course, somebody goes from their British accent to their Australian accent to their Irish accent, right? Like, they can't hold it. To a pirate accent, like whatever it was. It was just a whole lot of fun. Unfortunately, like I said, the kids just couldn't hang on with the game. But I think you could get those four adults together in a heartbeat and play the game again. And now that everybody kind of just knows how the system works, it just flows so well. Mm-hmm. It's so simple and smooth. So really enjoyed that one a lot. Forgotten Waters. I don't think it would have made my top 10. It just feels like a game that I would plan to play with people and then just play it. But I'm not like trying to get groups to play it. I'm not getting any groups to play anything right now. That happened to be one when I was quarantined.
For me, Forgotten Waters was a game that I completely and utterly enjoyed, but I don't need to play ever again. Like, Theme brings me in. I know I'm a thematic gamer, but Theme brings me in and gets me excited, but Mechanisms give it the staying power. You know, it's like if I want to go back to a game, then the Mechanisms, I got to get, you know, something down there. And this game is a story game. And I have many, many stories in my life. I don't need to tell this, I could tell a different pirate story. I can run through it again. There's nothing stopping me. But like, I'm kind of in the same world with the same characters, and the jokes repeat. Like, you know, you hear a joke for a second time, it's like, okay. you know, so there is enough there if you wanted to, like, if you really enjoyed that story exercise. But for me, like, I need more mechanical meat in order to really get multiple plays. However, it's excellent. It's a very good game. Another one I gave 8 out of 10. I think it was my number 4 co-op for 2020.
Oh, there you go. How many people did you play it with?
Well, 2.
Did you play mostly solo? 2. I'm just saying, to me, it's a game. It's, I guess you'd call it beer and pretzels, but to me, it's like a Monty Python movie or Saturday Night Live.
So Monty Python is probably is probably what you're getting, yeah.
Yeah. We started, When COVID hit, Saturday Night Live switched over to doing everything from home. They were like filming from home. We're like, let's do it. Like, I had not watched Saturday Night Live in 20 years, maybe 15 years, whatever it is, since Will Ferrell and that whole cast, right? And all of a sudden, I've been watching it every night now. Every Saturday night, we've been watching Saturday Night Live. And we had people living with us, so we had 3 or 4 of us all watching. And when you have 3 or 4 people at 12:30 in the morning, even though it's not the funniest show in existence, we're all just laughing. It's camaraderie. Mm-hmm. It's all that stuff kind of go together. So I thought that was
cool.
No. Really interesting. I'm going to quick do this. So this is Spirit Island Jagged Earth. This is the big box expansion to Spirit Island.
Yep.
I'll just keep it simple. If you love Spirit Island, there's no way you can avoid this. It adds like exactly what you want. It just adds more stuff. It adds 12 new characters or spirits. It also adds, it might be 8. It also adds cards for the original 4, like basic spirits, to make them a little more complex, which I thought was genius because you almost start to throw them aside because they're like the learning spirits. So it lets you kind of replay those. And the spirits are really unique. One of them is a build your own spirit. So as you level up, you pick what you want for that spirit and what set of cards and what things you want. And you literally like build your special powers. That's really cool. In terms of that, it adds more scenarios. It adds another piece that you can put on the board, like a little burning fire thing, in terms of all that. And I was trying to think, there was one other thing that was in there. Oh, and it adds new board tiles and stuff like that as well. I really love Spirit Island. So to me, it's just a no-brainer to have more, because it's really that asymmetry of give me another spirit, give me another spirit, give me another spirit, give me another spirit, and enjoyable. But I mean, if you didn't like Spirit Island, this is not going to like fix the game and make it something. So you could just absolutely avoid it. But if you love Spirit Island, like, just run and pick this up instantaneously.
I love Spirit Island. I don't have enough time for it in my life because it is a bear. It's a chore, even solo, yeah, to set it up. There's a fair amount of, like, you know, little fiddly, totally, the dayhound and everything. And I know that they're either it's out or coming for Steam and iOS. So I may take a look at that from the same people that just sent those a multiverse and One Deck Dungeon. Forget Handelabra, that's it. So that might have to be my just time, because it's just a lot of overhead to deal with and everything. But like, it is a magical 9.5 out of 10 game for me. So at some point it will get picked up. Top 5 game.
Nice.
Absolutely. All right. So my last individual game before Brant and I actually have played the same game, but this is not one. Actually, you've played this game a long time ago. So it is Freedom the Underground Railroad. I took a look at it again. It came out in like 20. It was 2012 when it originally came out as Conductor. You're going to see it on a BGG page listed as 2012 release. It was a different game, and they got picked up by Academy Games. They renamed it to Freedom. It's an old game. The reason I took a look at it in the Dice Tower is it's Black History Month. So this is a game that is very resonant with that community. Not everybody in that community wants to play this game, which is completely understandable. But I think for me, I'm kind of a radical for education, and if a game does it well, then I'm willing to engage it. So Freedom, the Underground Railroad, you are playing abolitionists who are helping slaves escape from the South to the North. It is a kind of a classic 2013 level cooperative game, which is basically a solo game with four roles. So they don't do a lot to like put in true cooperation. Like, you know, I go, then you go, but we basically have the same shared set of resources. The cooperative scaling is like save more slaves, you know? Right. So it's a solo game. Right. That's actually why I didn't love it when I first played it, because I played it with four. I feel like, you know, whoever's the alpha player is just going to, you know, do whatever. But you know, now that I've gotten into solo, I play this game is magical for me. Anyway. So the core action of the game is you're going to be playing these abolitionists, and you're trying to like move individual slave pizza, which is like unpainted wooden cubes. And the enemy of the game are slave catchers, and they move each time you move a slave. So like you move it, and then depending on what track, and it's like, you know, crisscrossing tracks all over the middle of America. So like you check which track the slave catcher's on, and they're kind of like the slave catcher responds. So like, you know, move, response, move, response, move, response. So then you're playing this game of cat and mouse. We're like, okay, I need to move the slave pieces on one side of the board, get the slave catchers to follow so that I can move my other slaves into Canada. And in this game, Freedom is Canada, right? So then you're playing this the game has heavy feedback. The puzzle has heavy feedback, and it has a great payoff where it's like, if you figure it out, you get like a, you know, you open up the space in order to get that hole, you know, it's like, oh, he opened the hole, shoot through. and I feel like it's just like, it's so good. Like that's the core action. It's so good. And there's other stuff too. Like you have to raise money because in order to get movement, you have to kind of buy it. So you have to have the money to do it. And you know, you have to manage a slave population on the bottom. So like the slaves are going to come in every single turn from the market. So like you have to be able to put them on the plantation or else they're lost, which is, you know, if you're talking about like there are people who don't want to play this game because it's about, it deals with slavery. Like that's the thing that's like, oh, I can't do it. Nope. I'm not playing a game. I don't care if it's blank wooden pieces. I'm not even going to put my mind space there. Fine. You know, I definitely want to honor people's kind of hesitation with that. For me, I think that this game is worth it because it has so much to say, especially now. So we're in a different time. I've reviewed this game multiple times throughout my reviewing career. We're in 2021. We, you know, the Black Lives Matter happened last year, and, you know, all this stuff with the Capitol riots and everything, like, you know, race relations are on our mind. And so I took a new look at Freedom, both on the Dice Tower and on my channel Shelf Stories, looking at the deeper history, just everything. So 9 out of 10. Love this game. It's going to stay in my collection forever. My big kind of like thing that I want to say is that why is this 9 years I'm still reviewing the same game? Can I get more games, please? Can I get and more games from diverse designers? Like, you know, Academy Games, a lot of white dudes, which is perfectly fine. I don't have a problem with that, but I say that and I have to really specify. I have no problem with that. It was 2012. We have to, you know, this is what happened. But now we're in this age where there's more persons of color designing. Let's get tell different stories. Tell stories about the Caribbean. Tell stories about different peoples from different lands with their liberation struggles. Again, this game is called Freedom, not slavery. It's called Freedom in the Underground Railroad. Tell more stories with more liberation themes in them. So, you know, that's the only thing. Like, this game, we shouldn't still be talking about this game. This shit, like, you know, you look at internet conversation. It's like, oh, what's a game that's like about oppressed peoples? Freedom in the Underground Railroad. Is there another one? Spirit Island?
Yeah,
right. You know, at Spirit Island, it intentionally kind of abstracts that out into like this fantasy world. It's such a seminal game, and you know, I thought it was time to turn to review it again. So, Freedom the Underground Railroad, excellent,
nice. Yeah, I haven't played it in a long time. Like, very long what did time. You say yeah. it was from 2012?
2013 was the actual Freedom the Underground Railroad for release, but it's a 2012 design.
Yeah, and I'm going to guess I played it in 2014.
Right.
So I probably haven't played it in 7 years. So actually, your revisiting the review may get me to revisit the game, you know, in terms of that and see.
Well, it's my February emotional 9th level is right with the now. Game, you right? have like 20 days.
Yeah, well, it's in our store library, so I can get it.
Yank it.
And try it out. So be good to do that. All right, I got one more here, and actually, I don't think I've told you about this game. This was one of my top games from the year, and I actually think you would enjoy this game a lot. The Stygian Society.
I'm well aware of it. I'm looking forward to playing it.
I will let you borrow this one.
Nice. So
you'll be all set. So the Stygian Society is you're like thieves, and it almost feels like it's a steampunk universe, I guess. It's kind of that. I don't know if that's exactly what it is. And there's just four in the game. So at first I was like, there's only four, but they are like engineered to work together. Right. So there's one that's really there's like kind of two that are fighters, and one's a support class, and one's a healer. Like they made a party, and you're trying to go up this tower okay. and steal loot from a wizard, I believe, mm-hmm. and there's different wizards and different bots. So you're going six levels up the tower. Halfway, you're going to fight like a mini boss. And then at the top, you're going to fight a wizard. And there's four different mini bosses and four different wizards. So each floor, you draw one of the four tiles, and it tells you what enemies you're fighting. And then you've got your ability cards. You've got a deck of level one, level two, and level three abilities. And there's a bunch of each. You just get a random one to start from level one. And as a team, you just go around taking one turn. And you take some kind of action on your turn, and the whole thing is based around a cube tower. Mm-hmm. So you're dropping cubes into a cube tower. There's a playthrough of this on our channel. and you're dropping cubes, then you also have to drop peril cubes. And the mm-hmm. cubes are different colors. So there's three different colors of peril, and those cubes are going to trigger the monsters on that floor. And then there's three different colors that like associate with the heroes, I guess, although they're thieves, so I don't know. But with the players, and they're going to trigger abilities happening. So some of the thing you do is you just aid. Like one of the characters, oh, I'm just going to drop more cubes in the tower so that the next player can trigger those and have a whole bunch. Because essentially it turns out, you know, a lot of the abilities are like, oh, you can target somebody in the front or back row and you deal one damage for each green cube you discard. So you're just trying to get a bunch of green cubes and maximize mm-hmm. Your damage on that. The cube tower is one that's not perfect. In other words, it'll hold cubes in it, but it's not like, I feel like Shogun is the one that like really holds a lot of cubes. They stay in there a while. Mm-hmm. They don't stay in there a lot. It more reminds me of Edge of Darkness, the AEG game, mm-hmm. where if the cubes don't come out that turn, they come out the next turn. Like right. they're not super stuck inside the tower. and you're just going through. You don't get
that effect of like eventually like a giant pile of cubes going to come down, like in Shogun or what's the other one? There was a Wallenstein or something. Like,
yeah,
God, I hated that. Oh Lord,
because yeah,
it was an area control game. So like you when you know, so like it all depends on like what you have on the board. So like if your opponent gets this giant bank of right. things randomly, it's like, well, what did I do? What did I play all that for?
Yeah, it's all, some people can track that. They know, oh, there's seven green cubes, there's four red, right? So this one is interesting though. Once you beat all the monsters on a level, you get treasure. The whole everything for the party is tracked on one board. Mm-hmm. You have common health, you have common experience. So when you level up, you all level up. And when you level up, it's not a lot of choice, but it's either, so if you have a level one card, you can shuffle your level two cards and take a random one, or you can pick from your level one cards what you want. And as soon as you gain a random level, then you can go back and pick whatever you want. So once I have a level two card, now I could pick any level one or level two card. It's so cool because there's a lot of cards. There's like mm-hmm. eight cards per level, I want to say. So you're really like crafting what your character is going to play like and how you're going to work. Oh, now that you have that card with that damage spell, I should grab this to be able to help you out. Or like when we played on our playthrough on the channel, I don't think I ever really dropped cubes. I was just the person who said, nope, that peril doesn't happen. Nope, that doesn't happen. Right. Yep, we're going to get extra loot. Because you get loot from the tower each level you go up, and there's like a peril thing, and it can trigger all sorts of stuff. It's really quite straightforward, but it's really compelling. Like, it's just a lot of fun dropping those cubes.
Nice.
I think you'll like the solo. The one part that's tricky is you play with three characters. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're that complex to run, but I was happier to run one character in a multiplayer game, even if I wasn't the person doing all the damage, than running three characters.
Right.
But it was really neat. But I've actually already reviewed that. So quickly, I just wanted to review. There's two expansions, the Tower Laboratory. So this one's really steampunk. This has like Tesla and a bunch of other stuff. And you're fighting like all this clockwork type stuff. But it's cool. They add a purple cube to this one. And they add like other mechanisms where like, oh, certain characters do damage to like clockwork ones or whatever. So it just really changed it up. And then the one that everybody's really interested in, because I haven't played it yet, is there's like a an author themed one. So you're like not Jane Eyre, Jane Austen, and like Bram Stoker, and I can't even all those different authors of the various books, and you're fighting the characters from novels, like English, British novels. It has a whole different system for leveling up where you collect ink wells and then spend your ink wells to get powers from a common pool. And as you defeat enemies, you can incorporate their powers. You can write their powers into your story. Mm-hmm. That's kind of neat. So I haven't had a chance to play that one yet. The tower one was cool and it felt different, and there's four more heroes. So the expansions are how you have to change your heroes, which you can tell like from Spirit Island, that's my favorite thing, is getting a new, you know, type of character to play off of. But the expansions are how you do that. So
cool.
That's Stygian Society and the expansions.
I am looking forward to it. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right. So we are going to end off. So if you've listened to One Stop Co-op Shop, you've heard plenty of coverage of this game. So I think you're okay, unless you really want to know Brant's opinions. But I got Adventure Tactics, Domian's Tower from Letterman Games, and we reviewed it. And then I lent it to my friend Brant over here, who was very interested as a person who likes Gloomhaven and who likes card-based dungeon crawlers, you know, adventure games and that kind of thing. So I'll let me describe it, and then I'll throw it to you. So like just... it is a card-based dungeon crawler. Well, not a dungeon crawler, but like more of an encounter system. It's a series of encounters, right? There's not a lot of like trash, what they call in that area. Yep. So like there's not a lot of small enemies, except at the very beginning, it's a series of boss battlers in the era, in the mode of Final Fantasy Tactics. So if you remember that old game, Final Fantasy Tactics, it was grid-based combat, very tactical. Tactical in terms of your positioning on the board, tactical in terms of the powers that you implement, and tactical in terms of what heroes you're bringing in the first place and how you build those heroes. So many different buttons to push with this one. The beating heart of this game is a card-based system, similar to Gloomhaven. You play a card, you have a hand of cards, and you play a card, do a thing. you know, play a movement card, you move. Play an attack card, you attack. Play your special ability, that you play a heal card, you do this. It's all based on the cards. You get two card plays per turn. You don't even run through your full deck on a whole battle. Like, you have like a deck maybe of, you know, 15 cards. Well, maybe a little more than that, but like, you're not going to run, you're not going to cycle your cards like you do in a Gloomhaven or some of the other games. You play your cards and you're done. The beauty of the game, A, is in the encounter design. There's a lot of different innovation with the encounter design. So, like, you know, some enemies lay down some walls, you got to deal with the wall. Some enemies lay down fire, deal with the fire. Some enemies are jumping up and down and, you know, in pools. This game makes you move, you know, so, and it's, you know, a series of encounters. And then the leveling system, which is the thing that people mention the most. You have a character archetype, but you can level them in any class you want. So if you want cleric, wizard, rogue, you know, like one of each, great. Yeah, and then you have prestige classes, so you can really mold your character in a lot of different ways. So that is the basic breakdown, Brant. What did you think?
It's so good. The game is so good.
Really?
You described it to me as Gloomhaven Light, and that's exactly what it is.
That's what I want.
Now, again, if people are just head over heels for Gloomhaven, which I am, they just have to set themselves up for, like, it's not Gloomhaven. It's not trying to be Gloomhaven. It doesn't go to the depth. It really just is trying to get you to play something and play it in a night, you know, right, or even shorter than that. It's very fast. So it
you
very
can play
much feels
three encounters in a night. Like, and
correct.
And,
yeah.
And
they're
not
about 20
like
to 30 minutes, I would say.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, for me, it's just the amount of story. It's like not even a paragraph. It's like two sentences. You know, it's like two sentence story. Here you go. Next encounter. And some of the encounters are just like, you go to a market stall, like, and you can do these options, or you draw a random encounter and you just read it and something happens. Like, they're really fast. Mm-hmm. So it's moving you through that. In terms of that, it's mostly linear. There's a couple choices that you make, mm-hmm, but for the most part, it's linear.
It funnels you. So like, you can make a choice and you end up in the same place, but it's like, what resource do I have when I get to that place, and how fast did I get to that place? Did I avoid the encounter and, you know, go up the back stairs and end up at the same place had I gone to the front stairs, but I have a little bit more to me because I didn't have that extra encounter.
Yeah.
I saved some hit points, or whatever. So like that, it's basically that, like, you can be a little bit clever with how you move through the places, but you're going to end up in the same place. Just depends on what resources you bring there.
Yeah. The leveling system is what everybody's going to talk about for this game. It's so good. It's that multi-class. It's that, did you say Final Fantasy Tactics when you were talking about it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's totally what it is. And the best part too, is like, it basically doesn't have experience. It's just when you beat an encounter, you level up.
Right.
So it's like every time it's like candy. You want to play the next game because you're like, oh my gosh, I got these two cards and I got this passive ability. Let's go. Let's shuffle. Let's play. Right. So it just wants you to play again because you're like, oh, I got to try this now. I want to see what this does. And it lets you remove cards from your deck. And the encounters are really interesting because especially the first couple, they really like change up what you're doing. Like, there's a chase scene and there's just a straight up combat. And there's like a flood of minions that you're trying to fight off, but meanwhile you're trying to get to the boss kind of thing. And then there's just the really strong ones that can you outlast them. The one part I didn't like in the encounters is that the villains move a lot, and it really hinders the like warrior classes. I found, and like, even though I'm playing a fighter that has taunt is like you move the enemy to you and that's fine, but I wish there was some stick in place or some ability that was like, when they move away from you, you get a free attack on them. Because I feel like I build up this, I have a fighter class with like 30 something hit points and they never get attacked. So there's no way for them to be like the true tank. So I didn't find a way to make like the real tank character. It might be in there and I just haven't played the class because there's what, five or six starter? I think there's five starter classes.
There are some.
And then like 15 other advanced classes. So I may just not have gotten that specific thing, but I would have appreciated that character being a little better.
Well, there are some classes. Well, there are some bosses where, and the rules. So the rules are like, okay, like what we talked about when we did the review was development. Like, so like development of like, you know, maybe smoothing out the rules and make sure everything's understandable. There are some bosses that like, once they come into range of a character, they stop. And there's some bosses that ignore that. So like some of the bosses, they theoretically, if they get close to your melee, then they're not going nowhere. Theoretically. Like yeah. It does, but it doesn't say so on the card. It usually says so. Like, cause the thing is, it usually is, if it's gonna be there, it's gonna be in the book, but like you're not looking at the book. You're looking at because you pull a card, do what it says for the enemy, and then done. So like it doesn't say so on the card, which will be more useful because you're looking at that more than you look at the book. The book is just there to set up the encounter, like you know, so is the map, and then the hit points. That's it. I don't need a whole bunch of stuff. So like there's a lot of little niggles and the production. So the production had some issues. The boards came out warped. They're going to replace them. We talked all about that. It's going to be a great cost to let them in games, but you know, that's just kind of like the deal. So just the production was the most difficult part of this. Like it actually does address Brandt's issue. So like there are some bosses that shouldn't be running away like that. And maybe we didn't know that. So, you know, but for the most part.
Right, and that might be on my part. So if you're going to play this with families, the whole idea that it's going to take 20 or 30 minutes, and depending on, you know, if they'll keep engaging, you could play two or three in a night. The one thing you're going to do is be like, hey, everybody potty break, because you're going to want to read the boss's AI for about 5 minutes before you start that encounter. And kids might not be patient sitting there. So just think about getting everybody to do their characters and then be like, hey, everybody go to the bathroom or go, you know, put your clothes away and we'll play another one, I promise. But really, you're trying to buy those 5 minutes to read that AI so you've got an idea how that boss works, because they are all different. So they're a little complex. And I may have missed some of those. That might be my issue. When it says, oh, they move in a random direction 5 spaces, maybe I wasn't supposed to move them because they're supposed to stay adjacent if possible in terms of all that. But yeah, it's just so fun in terms of all those things. So the only thing that I had was similar to what I was saying with Stygian Society. You have to run 3 characters solo.
Yep.
And it's a lot for me to run.
Yep.
And I don't actually mind, but here's what I've discovered. There's no doubt I'm a solo gamer, but I'm not really a solo gamer. So there's a point, what I realize is if I'm playing a game that's a one-off, I'm usually playing it solo, and 9 times out of 10, I don't even play the solo mode. I play two-player, Rotto style, and I just play the two players until I understand the game. Like, I'm really teaching myself the game. In a game like this, it's a campaign. I enjoy them up until the point that I realize this is who I want to play this game with. And as soon as I think of the one or two other people I want to play with, it's really hard for me to keep going, because I'm so focused on I want to see the joy that this person will have, and I'm not really as interested in playing the game out anymore. I'm more interested in bringing the joy of this game to that person than seeing out the end of the story. And that's a pretty consistent thing for me. Like, even video games, I was always happy to finish them, but like if friends came over and I was in the middle of a video game in high school or middle school or whatever, I would literally just stop the video game. My friends would be like, wait, you're on the final boss. I'm like, oh, it's fine. I'll beat it later. Because I just wanted to hang out with people, you know what I mean? And that's kind of the point I've gotten in this. You gave it to me, and I played whatever it was, 15, 10, whatever, in 2-3 days. And now all of a sudden I've played like one, and it's still set up here next to me, and I haven't come back to it because I'm now at the point where like, ooh, I would love to play this with so-and-so or so-and-so. I want to see how they feel about it. So that's just me as a, you know – just not a
well, you're a game evangelist, you're the game teacher. Like, you know, Brand has been teaching games since I moved to Connecticut. He taught me my first game when I got here in Connecticut.
There you go. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. That's my favorite thing, is to teach and see people find the joy in the games. Sure. And so when I start thinking about people that I know will like the game, that's when I start losing interest in playing solo myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I played the whole campaign. It was fun. I have too few people. I gotta get where I can. I got the hero pack over here. There's a new expansion coming, getting kickstarted. Yeah, I'm in for more stuff. This is a really fun one. As a matter of fact, like, there are certain games where like they come in and like another game just like immediately goes out, like get out. And this game booted Sword and Sorcery. Just like I had Sword and Sorcery, so a couple years old. I was kind of like, "Eh, there's new expansions. Maybe they'll kind of float in." This one came in. I'm like, "All right, nope." So not that they're the same game, but like, you know, I only have room for so much adventure in my life, and this definitely makes it because of its lower barrier of entry. I don't need to refresh a lot of rules before getting back into this. So no, this is a keeper for me, definitely, for sure.
Yeah, and when I say family game, I don't want people to make it sound like, oh, if you don't have a family, you won't enjoy this game. You absolutely mm-hmm. will. Like, sure. It's just don't picture Gloomhaven. Just picture something lighter than that. But they did such a good job of, because it's lighter, it can flow, right? It can just go. You could just play. You're just mm-hmm. boom, 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 boom. The roll to resolve is a little frustrating for me, especially that black die that goes from like 1 to 6. Mm-hmm. That's a little annoying to me. I'd rather have something a little more consistent with the dice. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the dice are, 1, 2, 3 or 2, 3, 4. And then I think the black die is like, I constantly roll 1 or 2 hits and the enemies roll 6 hits against me. And there's not a lot of defense in the game. So you're just dying. When you start getting hit by 3 enemies in a row, you're just
healing.
Dying.
There's a lot of healing. There's a lot of like,
yeah, down, so you got to get to all those healing things. But it's an awesome game. It's the best game I've played in 2021.
Nice.
Even ahead of these Euros, which I'll probably play more of because I have more people to play those, but it's just really a lot of fun. And it feels like the replayability is reasonable. You're going to be playing similar encounters, but going different paths to get there, like you said. So it's like replaying that JRPG, right? Like, just
that's what I would do. That's same I played that. Story. I played the heck out of Final Fantasy Tactics, Final Fantasy VII. I played the heck out of those games.
Awesome. What's coming up on your channel, Jason? Is there anything people should look forward to or on Dice Tower for reviews?
I tend to release twice a week on the Dice Tower. That may slow down a little bit because that's a pretty ambitious schedule. But I was kind of like, going back in the back catalog, like games that Tom didn't like so much, like Quirky Circuits, he gave it like a 5. And I'm like, this is outrageous.
Yeah.
Like, no way. I'm not letting that stand. So that was kind of like my initial introduction to Ice Tower. But like, whatever. Yeah, I get like the random game here and there. I don't request a lot of review comments. I really don't. I want to play more for depth. Once I ended the podcast, when I had the podcast, like you, Brent, I went for like a lot, like different games. This now it's like, okay, if I'm going to get something, I'm going to like, play it and, enjoy it. And, and then like do a review. This is my Dice Tower content. I'll probably slow down a little bit. And I also have playthroughs in One Stop Co-op Shop. Those tend to be lighter games as well. So like, Oniverse and Tiny Epic and a few others. So then on Shelf Stories, I have lots of content coming for Black History Month. Like I opened with a couple of things. A couple of things blew up that I had no idea were going to blow up. Like that, the video you mentioned on the two racisms, I really thought I was going to get like 50 views and like, okay, just be there. But like, now I'm like 2,500. I'm like, man, I really came up with something. So that's cool. No, it's really great. I love interacting. I love moving the conversation forward. I'm all about conversations. So then there's going to be more of that. And then once I'm done with that kind of like cultural stuff, then it's on to other stuff. Like my basic is mental health. So I'll get back to a little bit more like, just different topics in mental health, different history topics and whatever's coming. So like, I'm all about the interaction of games and life. So, and also these conversations as well. So like, I love sitting and talking to people. And when it's Brand, it's games. No question.
I was going to say, did I exhaust you now with almost 2 hours of reviewing games?
People will notice that I was stifling yawns. That is not because of Brand. It was a long day.
Yeah.
Oh, no, this was a pleasure, my friend. So I could have more conversations, different topics in real life, but also fun games as well.
Awesome. Yeah, step into the portal. Basically, we've been doing Marvel Champions every Thursday. And that's just for that fun of consistency, like just for because we're live streaming. That's my favorite thing to do. Mm-hmm. I don't care if we make mistakes, goofs. I just want to be there live. That's just that's very real to me. So I enjoy that. So we've just stuck with Marvel Champions. We are doing Marvel. I don't know if this will be out by then, but Marvel Crisis Protocol, which is the minis game. We're going to try that out on the channel. And again, a lot of the stuff we play, like we're not playing the heavier Euro games because they just don't show up well on the stream.
Right.
So, we sneak them in and Kathy and I play them at the house a lot because it's what we enjoy. And we figure, okay, like you, they're going to get 25, 40 views, but we're enjoying it and we can live stream it. So that's the point. It's totally for us. And then, we try to stick to those stuff that people can really see. So minis games and card games and in quicker playing stuff and stuff where Larry and I have a lot of energy or what we've been doing a lot of more of. So we'll have that coming up. But I did receive a copy of this. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know what this is, Three Sisters.
Nope.
This is the Roll and Write follow-up to a little game called Fleet the Dice Game.
Oh, there you go.
So actually, we got to play test this. So that was awesome that we got to play test this and work a little bit on it. And then they were nice enough to send us a copy, Matt and Ben, for Motor City Games. And they're going to be, sorry, I'm showing it, but for the podcast, I'm not saying it. Three Sisters. And yeah, it's got that same feel. It's got that dice draft kind of feel, but it's a dice draft on a rondel. So we're going to do a live playthrough this before the Kickstarter and hopefully be up there. And it's funny because I never really wanted the channel to be like Kickstarter previews, but I can't pass this game up. Like Fleet the Dice Game was just, I'm almost associated with that game at this point, right? Like, So I'm really excited to be able to play that. And it's really good. I mean, if people didn't get Fleet the Dice Game and they can't get it, just get Three Sisters. It's right in the same name. And they'll really enjoy it. I guess if you didn't like Fleet the Dice Game, which it's only like one or two people I know that will tell me like I really didn't enjoy it, then it probably won't be something that you will enjoy instead, but really neat. So that's what's coming up us. And and we'll get more people on the podcast and whatnot. But Jason, you are invited on any time. So when you get a backlog of 15 games that you need to review, you know who to ask.
No, that won't happen anymore. I'm a little bit past those days, but no, but actually Brent did come on my show for the Core Quest preview, so that was fun too.
Oh right. And in the summer I think we did like comeback, what is the whole thing, our setback will be our comeback or something.
Did we do that?
We did something with Brian and I for the store in the summer. I can't remember.
Oh, right. Exactly. Oh, the COVID, like the how to run a game store in the time of COVID.
Yeah, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. In terms of all that. So yeah, no. But yeah, come back anytime, Jason. It's been a blast. And this is On Shelf Stories. Then check out our podcast, Portal Game Podcast, and our channel, Step Into the Portal, and vice versa for people listening to this. We did some cross content with Every Night is Game Night, but go check out Jason's channel, Shelf Stories, and his reviews on Dice Tower, as well as your top 50 is coming out on Dice Tower this year. Was that
top 50-50 with Liz? So we're calling it top 50-50. It's my 50 and her 50. Oh, just the best, baby. Going down to 100 is like, okay, I'm okay with these games, but like my top 50 is like, mwah, love that. That'll be coming this summer when Liz is on break.
Awesome. I think that's it. We should wrap up this episode. Episode number 161. Everybody, thanks for listening. It's just Reviewapalooza. I didn't give it a Star Wars title this time because it makes sense. But that is that. Until next time, I am your host, The Brant, joined by
Jason from Shelf Stories.
And until next time, I hope you step into the pool. Thanks, later, everybody. Bye.
Later, everybody.